take a look at the left side of the diagram, and the only reason it's the left side, you know, that we're, the only reason we're putting these particular attributions on the left side is because you have to start somewhere and end somewhere. The attributions we did before are the primary ones, and in the world of conventions of Kabbalah, that which is primary can be found on the right side, and that which comes second can be found on the left side. So these are the secondary attributions, the ones that add some color and design and texture to what we did to begin with. So the attributions on the left-hand side of the Four Worlds diagram begin with the members of the archetypal family. The archetypal family is the combination of father and mother and son and daughter, just exactly like the nuclear family that we're used to. In fact, the nuclear family could almost be said to be a symbol all of its own of the divine archetype, which is kind of interesting because there's a lot of other forms of family, and they might be a little bit annoyed to hear that. But anyway, it's kind of interesting that the two should be so directly connected. I'll bet you can figure out, without my telling you, which family member belongs to which world. But I'm going to tell you anyway. So, just to make sure. So now on the left-hand side of the Four Worlds diagram, at the top of the first world, in the center of the left margin, I want you to write the word father.
That's at the top of the...
In the middle of the left-hand margin, just at the height of the top of the first circle, right across from where you wrote Yod before, this time on the left-hand side, you're going to write the word father. And below that, just at the height of the top of the second circle, about 2 inches below the word father, you're going to write the word mother. You have to remember that at this stage of the description of the process of creation, there is no gender. You can describe something as masculine or feminine. You can describe something as mother or father. And you in no way invoke physical gender. This is way, way before the creation of any shapes and forms and bodies. When you finally come into existence, when any physical thing finally comes into existence, it has in it simultaneously all these qualities that make the world exist. Presumably, you're talking on a phone. And a phone is a simple physical object, and it too has a masculine and a feminine, a mother and a father, a fire and a water. The qualities of everything that make up the physical, real universe are composed of all these things together. A man is composed simultaneously of male and female, mother and father. A woman is composed of male and female, mother and father, so that there is no, how would you describe it? There's no chauvinism here. This is totally beyond that. I know that it's a sensitive issue in many times, and this system comes from what is normally thought of as a paternalistic system. On this level, it is totally not that. If you were to take the suits, which we associate here with wands and cups, they're perfectly equivalent. They're perfectly equal. And even though you describe one before the other, they don't come one before the other. You may remember that when we talked about the Tree of Life and we looked at the 10 circles that made up the Sephirot and the Sephirot which make up the tree, and we described them as the numbers 1 through 10, and they seem to come into existence in a sequence, 1 first and 10 last, and each of the others in order. Because we're organized the way we are, and because our perceptions are limited, and because we are limited by who and what kinds of creatures we are, what kind of brains we have, and because we see things in time and in sequence, we tend to think of things as coming one before the other and one after the other in a hierarchy. But then I showed you the diagram of the path of the lightning sword, which the intent of which was to show that all 10 Sephirot, the entire universe and all of its implications were created in a single flash, in a single split second. So there was no one, no two, no three. One didn't come after the other. All of it was done at once. And the same thing is true here. Because we have to say something first, because we organize things in a certain way, as a convention, as just a convention of speech. So we put the masculine first and the feminine second. But in no way does it reflect an order of importance or precedence.
Well, I may not be correct, but I'm thinking about something like associated with the first letter combined with something else, like Abba, and it means father.
Yes, well, there is an actual word, Abba, which means father, and Ima, which means mother, and there are actual Hebrew words that mean these things. What we're doing now is not giving you the word for father or the word for mother, but simply the attribution. These are qualitative descriptions. And there is a place in this whole thing for those names, for the Hebrew name of mother and father, and other things as well. We will not be able to cover those things tonight. There are a whole range of topics that we are not going to be able to finish in this course. This course is simply too small a focus, too small a compass to include all the things that we would need to include for you to understand everything completely. At some point, perhaps, we will do more. But right now, what I think I'd better do is give you the balance of these associations. If father comes first and mother comes second, then obviously the third circle, the third of the three worlds, would be the sun, since we're following the order of male-female. So at the top of the third circle, in the left-hand margin, write the word sun. That would be 2 inches approximately below the word mother. And then, at the top of the fourth circle, 2 inches below the word sun in the left margin, write the word daughter. Okay? Now, each family member is associated with a net of qualities and powers that kind of describe it and give it color. Each family member is itself such a description and gives color and substance and texture to each of the four worlds. But I'm going to give you a number of associations to add to this set of qualities, and this is what they are. Below father, I want you to write two words separated by a slash. The two words are energy / strength. Put that right below father. Below mother, I want you to write shape / proportion. Below the sun, below sun, write measure / definition. Below daughter, write substance / endurance. Now let's go back to the top of this diagram again, and below the words energy and strength in the world of the father, write will / intention. Below the words shape and proportion in the second world, write the words meaning / belief. In the third world, underneath measure / definition, write order / system. In the fourth world, underneath substance endurance, write uniqueness / freedom. One last set. Below the words will / intention, I want you to write the word spirit / intuition. That's in the first world.
Oh, I'm sorry. Say that again.
Spirit / intuition.
Under father?
Under the father. Yeah, under the words will and intention. Now you have three levels of description underneath Father. Underneath, at the bottom of the set of descriptions in the second world, underneath meaning and belief, write the words heart / feelings. In the third world set, under order system, write mind / thought. And in the fourth world set, under uniqueness and freedom, write body / sensation. So I'm going to go over those briefly as separate groups. The first world, the first circle, is the Father. Energy and strength, will and intention, spirit and intuition. The second world is Mother, shape and proportion, meaning and belief, heart, feelings. The third world is the sun, measure and definition, order and system, mind and thought. And the fourth world is the daughter, substance and durability, uniqueness and freedom.
I thought it was endurance. It's durability.
Well, actually, you could use either word. Okay. Since we started with endurance, continue with that then. Uniqueness and freedom, body and sensation. These attributions, they're just the beginning of a net of associations. Each of these attributions is a variable that modifies and amplifies and explains all the others. Look at the tarot suit attributions on the right-hand side of the tree. See how the suits begin to expand in meaning like ripples from a stone thrown into a clear pool when you take all the other things into account. Pick any suit of your choice, one that you like and feel comfortable with. And look at all the things on the left and the right that are associated with it. And see how powerful it is.
On the left of the right of the actual tree?
Yeah, if you look and you'll see at the last set of associations in a given world, mm-hmm. on the right-hand side will be the suit association. It'll be the wand or the cup or the sword or the pentacle. And that is exactly the same as, contains and is colored by, is modified and improved by all the other things that are said about that world on both the left and the right. So if I were to go to the pentacle, this is Earth, the world of substance, the world of endurance,
the
world
of... It's on the four worlds diagram, it's not on the tree of life.
That's right, it's on the four worlds diagram. We're working only with that right now. So what you're looking at is a whole series of levels of knowledge, association, attribution, association, energy, meaning, subtlety, complexity, and interrelationship. And all of those things that we just said can be found in the single idea, the single design of a pentacle or a sword or a cup or a wand. Let me organize it for you in another set of fours, just to give you a different idea. Let's go over to the left-hand side and look at the four worlds in this way. The first one is energy. The second is shape. The third is measure. And the fourth is substance. Energy, shape, measure, and substance. Strength, proportion, definition, endurance. Will, meaning, order, and uniqueness. Intention, belief, system, freedom. Spirit, heart, mind, and body. intuition, feelings, thought, and sensation. What an enormous catalog of qualities and how they interplay. That's a whole universe of consideration by itself, and that, in fact, makes up a good chunk of the study of tarot. How those attributions work with, against, and through each other. Okay. Again, at this point, are there any questions or comments? No? Okay. What I want to do now is I want to show you how the Tree of Life is born of these four circles, of these four worlds. All 10 positions on the Tree of Life are to be found here. If you look at this diagram of four overlapping circles, can you find how that might be so?
Repeat that again, Walt.
All 10 positions on the Tree of Life are created right in front of your eyes by these four overlapping circles.
Yes.
Can you see how it's done?
Uh-huh.
Good. Hold on to the thought. Just so long, there's one person. Is anybody else? Can anybody else see how it's done? Say that again?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. What I'm going to do is, again, even though you can see it, I'm going to specify it. I'm going to lay it out for you. And I want you...
see it.
Okay, well, good. So some of you can and some of you can't. I'm going to describe it for you, and I'm going to ask you to write numbers where I tell you to write them. The first of the 10 Sephirot, Keter, can be found in the center of the very first circle, which is marked with a gray dot. You'll see that top circle has a gray dot at the center, and label that dot number one. Put a one, a little one above it.
Just a minute. The top, very top circle.
Yep.
I don't have a gray dot on it. I have four dots, but it's not the top. It's the second circle down.
No, no. If you take a look at the very top circle, there is a gray dot there. Not at the top of the top circle, but in the middle of the top circle.
Oh, okay.
It's
okay,
the center.
Sorry.
Okay, it's the center of the top circle.
Sorry about that.
Okay, that's where Keter is. It's the center of the first breath. Now take a look at the place where the second circle overlaps with the first circle. You see where the circles cross. On the right-hand side, which is diagonally slightly below number one, you'll see the place where the two circles cross. And at that intersection point, put the number two. That's Chokhmah. Now over on the left-hand side, where it properly belongs, where the two circles, the first and the second circle, overlap, at the point of intersection, write the number three.
So that's where the second dot is.
That's, no, not where the second dot is. It's on the left-hand side.
Oh, okay, okay, on the opposite to the two.
Opposite of the two, exactly. It's where they cross. So we have the supernal triad, one, two, and three, as the center of the first circle and the place where the first and second circles cross. Now, if you go down to the second gray dot, which is actually the center of the second circle, we never discussed that one. That one is not a Sephira, but it does have a name. I'm going to tell you to put above that second dot the letter D. And it stands for dot, which is D-A-A-T-H. You can just put that separately somewhere. Don't put it on the diagram. All we're going to put on the diagram is the letter D. That's right below the number one.
So it stands for what? D-A-A?
It stands for D-A-A-T-H. That's the Hebrew name, and it means knowledge.
Is that the second dot?
That's the second dot. That would be in the middle of the abyss.
Yeah, you told us that.
Right. Did I tell you that? And that,
yes,
of course,
yes,
is north.
The little outline of the circle.
Exactly. That's the little ghost of a Sephira that is not counted among the ten. But we'll label it here with a D. Now, directly underneath the number two, on the right-hand side, there is the place where the second circle overlaps with the third one. And at the point of that crossing, put the number 4. Likewise, on the left-hand side of the diagram, directly under the number 3, is the place where the second and the third circle cross on the left. That intersection point on the left is number 5. So 4 is Chesed, 5 is Gevurah. Now the center of the third circle, directly below Dodd, is number 6, Tiferet. So put the number 6 over the third dot in the center. Where the fourth circle and the third circle cross, where they intersect on the right, is number 7, Netzach. That's directly below number 4. And of course, where the fourth and the third circle overlap on the left, directly across from number 7, is number 8, Hod. Put the number 8 in. Then we have the number 9, which is the center of the last circle, and it's directly under the number 6. Now to find the number 10, since you know where Malkuth is, all you need to do is go to the bottom rim of the fourth circle, directly below number 9. Put a dot there by yourself, write in a dot, which doesn't exist on the diagram. And above that dot, write the number 10. There, you have the tree, created by the 4 overlapping and descending circles. So the 10 arises out of the 4. That's why the tree looks the way it looks, and that's why it has the proportions that it has. You may remember at the beginning I asked the kind of rhetorical question, does a circle have to be a circle? Can it be some other shape? Does the tree have to look that way instead of some other way? And the answer is both yes and no. Working within this system, this is the only way it could be. And so you see that the 10 numbers of the 4 suits of tarot arise directly out of the suits themselves. When the 4 suits have come into existence, the 10 numbers are born with them. Does that strike anybody as surprising?
Yes.
Who says yes?
Martha. It's fascinating.
Isn't it, though? The peculiarity of sacred geometry is that it reveals in a picture, in a simple, single, quick picture, a whole very spectacular range of otherwise unsuspected relationships. Gina, how does this, is this something that you're familiar with?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Familiar with it I've been looking, you know, studying sacred geometry as well. That's why I told you I knew. I saw the tree because I knew exactly where it was, because you can take the tree of life,
mm-hmm,
and actually overlap it with the flower of life.
Absolutely. Good for you.
The exact point.
Debbie, can you visualize all this?
Definitely. I have a question, though.
Uh-huh.
When you talk about world of formation,
mm-hmm,
like you say the third world of formation,
mm-hmm,
is that you're meaning that third circle?
That's right.
Okay, then this is starting to make sense.
Okay. Some of you are students of the correspondence course, and a good deal of this is stated or mentioned without any explanation.
Very much so.
And for people who are not, like Gina, familiar with this material because they've studied it before, it tends to make no sense, and it tends to leave you kind of wondering and possibly a little bit annoyed because you're given a whole bunch of information about things you've not heard of before. So this is the way in which that set of references begins to become clear. These same references can be found in books about tarot in many places. And again, for people who are not familiar with Kabbalistic references, the references in those books make little or no sense, and they seem to be more of an annoyance than a help. At this point, they will begin, just begin, to be helpful. They'll expand your sense of what the symbols of tarot are about. Eventually, they will give you a great deal of range and subtlety in interpretation and reading. This is where the meanings come from, guys. This is where the meanings of the suits, the pictures on the cards, the interpretations and spreads and everything, all of that comes from this material. So anyway, I should ask one or two other people. Helena, are you familiar with any of these things?
Right now, yes.
Excuse me?
Right now, yes.
Not yet. Okay. Well, you will be...
Yes, yes.
Oh, yes, yes, you say. I thought you when you speak, you need to speak a little louder or put your mouth closer to the phone because otherwise I can't hear you. But anyway, good. So what I'm going to do now is leave this particular part. This is the second portion of what I wanted to give you, and it's the first piece of sacred geometry, and it brings us from the number 4 to the number 10, but we still have the issue of the number 22. Does anybody have any idea, including you, Gina, who have studied some of this before, how this same diagram, the same picture of the four worlds, the same overlapping four circles, gives us the number 22?
I'd want to say you'd have to probably do a rotation.
Well, actually, there is a very specific form that is also a piece of sacred geometry that is contained within the same set of images. Now that the number 10 has been created, the number 22 will arise very quickly thereafter, and that will be actually what we're going to come up with next. The name of the image that we are going to draw that produces the number 22 is called the cube of space. Now, that's interesting, because I hear a number of people saying, aha, I recognize the words. Does anybody actually know, or has anybody actually studied anything at all connected with a cube of space? Or are you familiar with its parts and how it's built?
In the correspondence course, you described it.
That's right. In the correspondence course, we did. So Debbie has some familiarity.
So I guess I am, sort of.
Okay.
Aware of it. Well,
good.
I am aware of it.
Sherazad, how about you?
Yeah, I've been exposed to it with the correspondence course and also some books I've read and some of the studies with Boda.
Okay, good. And Linda, and you have the same issue.
I've been exposed to it. That's
right.
About what I can say.
It's funny to hear yourself say you're exposed to it. It sounds like a little bit of a disease, you know. But but you're inoculated now, so you should be safe when we talk about it in a couple of minutes. So we're going to go on to that in our next segment.